Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You once again I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Well, good evening, and I'd like to welcome you to the Stop Child Abuse Now Talk Radio Show, sponsored by NASCA, which stands for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Penelope Bennis, and I am from Bellevue, Washington. On my host team this evening is Annie Margis from California. And tonight, our type of show is Survivor Professional Night. We use an open mic forum. It's a Q&A as we address and discuss issues related to intervention, prevention, recovery from childhood abuse. And our Survivor Professional this evening is Pastor Deborah Schleich. So we welcome you, Deborah. And this is scan number 2907. It is April 26, 2022. And before I introduce you and give you a little bit of background information on Pastor Deborah, who's also a NASCA family member, longtime NASCA family member as well, I wanted to tell you a little bit about NASCA and NASCA's mission. If you would like to learn more about NASCA, if you're intrigued about getting involved, about joining our show, you do not need to have any experience, we will be happy to greet you and welcome you to the show. Annie will meet you on our back line and transition you in. The number to join the show tonight is area code 646-595-2118. So again, the number is area code 646-595-2118 to join the show. And no experience necessary, just curiosity and a willingness to want to get involved. So I'm very, very proud to be a member of NASCA. I'm also an adult survivor of child abuse. And the work that NASCA does brings me so much hope and is part of my healing and recovery journey because at NASCA, it's a focus on child abuse, trauma, prevention, intervention, recovery. We have a single purpose at NASCA, and it's to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect, and we do so with only two goals. The first, as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. And I personally do believe it's still taboo. I had two discussions today with college students and also with some family members, both witnessing situations of child sexual abuse or sexual abuse and a reticence to discuss it publicly and have the victims come forward. So I do still think that the education is very, very important, and it's an important part of our mission. The second goal is offering hope and healing through numerous paths. We provide many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, recovery. So if you'd like to become a part of our show this evening, all you have to do is call the following number, area code 646-595-2118, and my amazing and wonderful co-host Annie will greet you on our back line and welcome you into the show called Q&A. They're calling discussions with a survival professional. We use an open mic forum so everybody has an opportunity to participate in the discussion, whether they want to offer a comment or have a question or want to bring up a topic that they'd like to discuss and get some input from the survival professional and the other panel members. And our tonight, our special guest and longtime NASCA family member is Pastor Deborah Schleiss. She grew up all over the world in the military family and in a family where her mother was mentally ill. And Dr. Deborah is now a survivor professional. She lives in Pensacola, Florida, and she's trained in ministry, mental health, working with substance abuse, and is a trauma-informed, trained social worker. So she is has a lot in her wheelhouse and wears many different hats. She volunteers with many community organizations. And to quote Pastor Deborah, she says, and I quote, "She can minister by text, phone, Skype, in person, and however the Lord directs her 24/7. And she has obviously been called to this work. She teaches that humans have three parts, being of spirit, soul, and the physical body. And she believes that all three are important and that each one needs care. So looking forward to the show this evening. And she's been an active NASCA family member, and we are looking forward to having her in our family for a very long time. So, again, please engage in the show this evening. Do not hesitate to call in. And one last time, the number to call in is area code 646-595-2118. So without further ado, Pastor Deborah, I just wish to thank you for being on this evening and welcome you to the show.
We were discussing. Wonderful.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, no, we were discussing before the show went live about, you know, despite the fact that there's a lot of pain that comes from experiences that we as adult survivors have had throughout our lives and especially in our childhood, the second part of our mission statement, which is offering hope and healing. The healing and hope, it is possible. It is possible, you know, that we can move forward in life and have contentment and peace and joy as adult survivors. And I know we were talking about that aspect of our mission statement, as well as, you know, in terms of the recovery and recovery being ongoing, an ongoing process within our lives as we experience both delights and also disappointments and traumas such as triggers or very significant events as in, you know, death or illness of a loved one, how we can manage as hopeful and healing survivors through those events during our healing journey. So I know we discussed that, and I'm looking forward to having that discussion with you tonight. So I did want to turn it over to you now.
Okay. When someone has been abused as a child, a lot of formative things, which in treatment world and even spirituality are called child development, have been sort of distorted. What somebody thought was love, abuse, or safety. And a child, if they live in that a long time, their soul develops, maybe we'll call it twisted or perverted viewpoints of life, death, friends, family. They learn how to survive in a situation. They also are having many, many spiritual experiences, called out-of-body experiences, disassociation. So as they grow into their teenage years, they sort of learn to live with whatever happened to them. They can shut it off, compartmentalize it, lock it away. But when family members do die, or now with COVID, and there's a lot of death because maybe the family that the child grew up in doesn't talk about death. And I like to use the story, it's true, of the three faces of Eve. The story is that the custom, the culture, tradition of this family was that when someone passed away, like your grandmother, you put them in a coffin and you put them in your living room and you kiss them on the cheek. Now, they're probably cold and you say goodbye to them, and it would help you to not mourn them in death. It was a way of saying goodbye. And this young girl was about maybe four, playing under the house, and she was forced to kiss her dead grandmother. And it freaked her out so much she disassociated. And somebody kissed the grandmother, but she divided into Eve black and Eve white. Now, was that a traumatic event? Yes. So death in our families has culture and traditions, can be very triggering. Maybe somebody was helpful to you and they pass away and now you feel lost. Or if it was the perpetrator or somebody, you might feel glad. But death is a topic that most people are not prepared to talk about. There are cultures and how we say goodbye to people. You know, we have the funerals and we have other things. So for somebody coming from child abuse, even death can be perverted. And they may be told that they can come back and help you. And maybe, you know, you will sense them. And there's some young guy out there now. He's saying his dead mother's helping him, okay? And so there can be some strange things about death, but it can bring about all kinds of feelings of loss, not feeling safe, and you can get triggered again. And some people do end up in psychiatric hospitals. You know, a triggering event occurs. And death is just one of the many, you know, incidences. And what has to happen in healing is whoever somebody goes to for healing, they have to understand triggers, healing, death, and just life circumstances. Death, it's not only physical. You could lose your job, and it's a death to you. It's a loss. It's a breaking of something that's been in therapy or spirituality, we call it a soul tie. And how I understood it was you would have an umbilical cord or a cord attached to your heart, say, and it would be attached to somebody else. And if they pass away, and this happened with my father, now he didn't abuse me, but there is a loss and you will feel depressed. Darkness come. And I had this cord that needed to be attached to a father figure. And I needed to be secure in a relationship with a father that loved me. And I needed that cord to be able to love the person and receive it. So I directed my cord up to the Heavenly Father spiritually. So it wasn't so bad when my father passed away. And sometimes if you have my mother, because she was mentally ill, she really had not been much in my life. So on her passing away in my living room with liver cancer, I had said my goodbyes a long time ago, but I did everything I could for my father and the family. And I had volunteered as a hospice volunteer, which you go through and you learn how to sit with dying people. And you become familiar with death. And so I did that because everybody needs to have that, especially if you're a pastor or something. Most therapists don't do that. They don't volunteer with hospice and sit with dying people or their relatives or something. And so death, it can be triggering. But there's an even more important death that needs to occur within oneself to be healed. The child that was abused is no longer physically there because most of the people have grown up. You know, they're not that child anymore. And if you stay in that identity and personality of being that child, that victim, and always abused, then that's who you are. And so sometimes that little one needs to sort of pass on and let the adult in somebody who hasn't been able to develop come forth. And that's the story of the three faces of Eve. Eve White, who was sort of a very sickly lady, just had no strength. She was not capable of raising a child. And Eve Black, she was like to go out partying and drinking. She wasn't. And what it took for her to get healed was a man had to be in her life, loved her. He knew that she had been abused and said, that's okay. I'm going to stay with you. I love you, and I'm going to help whatever you need me to do so you can get your daughter back. And so Jane was created in Eve, and the other two died. They disappeared. And she was now Jane. And she was probably the child. Jane was probably the personality who this little girl was always supposed to be. But it got delayed, you know, because of the trauma of kissing her grandmother. And she had two other people sharing her body that were totally opposite. And until they would give up and Jane became stronger because of love from not only a psychiatrist but love of her daughter, the other two recognized they were not capable of moving forward and with a loving husband, being a mother of a child. So they actually, in the great movie with Joanne Woodward, you'll hear them say, I don't know what's wrong. I think I'm dying. And the other one knew it was time to go, and she actually gave away her favorite dress to her psychiatrist. She bent her head down, and she was gone. So there is death. Actually, believe it or not, that has to occur inside of people. And it can be scary because that which you hung on to, lived your life, is gone. And she had to learn who Jane was. And did she create Jane? Was Jane the healing personality coming forth because of love of the psychiatrist and this man? Yes. She knew the memories of her life, and she could remember her second grade teacher and her third grade and fourth grade. And but her attitude was she didn't blame her mama for forcing her to kiss her dead grandmother. She said that was just their way of helping you not to mourn so much and to say goodbye to your, you know, your granny. And so she had no bitterness, no unforgiveness towards her family that caused her to be so sick. And Jane was able to do that. So there, for children of abuse, they're not the person probably who they were supposed to be, because they sort of got sidetracked. And they formed whatever they needed to form inside of them to survive. And in the Bible, it does say, as you think in your heart, so you are. So your thoughts are very important. Your feelings are very important. And death is a part of the biological life. We know that. Some people get to live. I just saw a lady. She was 119 years old. Others don't even make it out of the womb. Some die in childbirth. You know, some through no fault of their own are killed in car wrecks. And death is a part of our lives, and we all have to learn how to deal with it. I don't like it when pets die. It's sad. And so it is a part that can trigger somebody who's been abused. So, and grief comes back up because you go, the me that maybe I was supposed to be was killed. You know, I don't know who I'm supposed to be. And then if you have a family member or a close friend or a grandmother who was there for you and loved on you and they pass away, the loss is great. So I'll leave it there and see what anybody would like to comment or ask about.
Well, Pastor Deborah, thank you so much. And that is, I have never seen that movie, but now I'm intrigued to watch it, number one. But I do think, you know, it's very interesting because today I was actually reading about, you know, children and the act of abuse and sexual child abuse and all the different types of, you know, traumas and neglect that these ACEs that, you know, we've discussed, the children experience. And the soul injury, the definition of a soul injury, the body, mind, and spirit, and how even, you know, if we do not address and heal from, you know, go through this healing process, address that trauma, we can, you know, stay, you know, within and live that trauma, whether it's age-related, like you had said, being stifled in development, and being, you know, a grown woman with, you know, with a chronologically, you know, maybe older, but emotionally, you know, still a child, or develop in terms of dissociation, in terms of, you know, splitting. So that's very, very interesting as well, relates to a soul injury and the injury and trauma and triggers and moving forward and how death can actually play a role within all of that. But I was reading a lot about soul injuries, and I think that is so been such a part of my recovery and healing, was not only to go into therapy, talk therapy, which addresses the mind, but it doesn't address spirit and the body. So, you know, you're talking about, you know, it's a there's the approach to all three and not just one. But I think,
what's happened in the church is they don't want to talk about that your mind, your soul is what it's called, needs healing. They just think a lot of times if you have enough faith, God will heal it. But I have learned how the pattern works is your spirit gets information, truth, light, and then that it releases that to the soul. And the soul, whatever it thinks, whatever it believes, whatever happened, the soul wounds, it gets healed from the truth, from the spirit. And in the Bible, King David of Israel, his soul, when his family was coming against him, trying to kill him and take over the kingdom, his soul was very depressed. So he had to have a family meeting on the inside. His spirit went to his soul and said, "Soul, why are you so downcast today? You're going to come with me, and we're going to go into the presence of the Lord." And sometimes your soul has bad days, and the spirit part of you has to go, "No, honey, we ain't going to sit in that mess. No, we got some truth and light. God loves us, and we can be healed. No, we're not going to sit in that mess and keep feeling that way. We're not going to do that. You're going to come with me, and we're going to go into the presence of the Lord. We're going to rejoice or sing or something." So I learned how to do that from David. Now, that is sort of done in mental health therapy, maybe through hypnosis, or if they know you have multiple personalities, they will try to, in the movie Sybil, or even in Three Faces of Eve, they will try to get the different dissociative parts of you to sort of have a family meeting and make each other aware that there's somebody else in there. Because sometimes what happens is life comes at us physically. It comes at our soul, and there is a spirit realm. But most of us aren't in touch with the spirit realm. We're just in touch with the biological world, the natural world, and the world where our soul gets hurt. And those two are connected. They're very powerful. We see it, you know, around all the time, people hurting animals, polluting the oceans, child abuse, human trafficking, okay? Women or men getting abused in domestic violence, murders, shootings, okay? It's a hard place. And what a person who's been abused, believe it or not, when I work with them, they all got parts. They've all disassociated. They've all left their bodies. And that was their way of escape to survive. Because the fear is so great. And the, what do you call it, treason of the rejection of a mother's safety and love or a father. It will kill the child if it does not leave the body, become somebody else. And what happens is it's done very early. You may not even know that it happens, but the mind is a powerful thing. We learn a lot about that from military people. How can men go into war, kill other people, and come back and they compartmentalize it? They shut that behind that door, and they don't open it. And they do real well as long as they're in the system of the military. But when they retire, or some people are, you know, they don't talk about World War II. They don't talk about what they did or what they saw. They don't do that. You know, that was war. Other people want to talk about it. And for children who've been abused, they've had a hard time getting people to even hear them that this happened to them. Where did it happen? In families. It happened by Catholic priests in private schools. It happened in orphanages. It happened by your cousins, your uncles. In some communities, it's your brothers doing it to you, your nephews. Okay? Others, as soon as you can have your period, the girl is sold into marriage. Okay? But people don't really sort of talk about it. Okay? And so it's an area, sex is an area that's not very well talked about. And if it is, it's not talked in, we'd call it, medical terms, okay, with the right names for the body parts. So we're not taught. And we are also trained by our family's culture. Some kids get the birds and the bees taught. Why do they call it birds and the bees? Because the adults are embarrassed about sex. They don't want to talk about it. Okay, well, they know how it happened. You're here. So it's hard. Like, I look at my parents now. They're both dead. Nobody talked to me about it. And I had to look at them. Well, somewhere they had sex because I got conceived. But it was a topic that nobody talked about, even as adults. And so it is a hard topic. And children were looked at, and still are, you're just a piece of property. I watched a wonderful movie, true story, about this guy from Russia who discovered how to make caviar. He had a child, and he just told his friend, "Don't you tell me how to raise my child. I will raise him the way I want them raised, to do what I want. And you don't have a right to interfere." Some parents believe because my egg and sperm created you, you're my property. And I birthed you from the mother's side. Times when a mother, if she speaks up against husband, uncle, or something, She might get kicked out through the street. She will choose her life over the child. Okay? She'll sacrifice the child for her own self. That's, you know, survival of the fittest. I'm more important than you are. Does that all happen? In some cultures, child abuse is normal standard procedure. We've got to trigger you. We've got to get you disassociated, programmed, so you won't remember anything we do to you. You become a Manchurian candidate through trauma and abuse. Okay? Is that done? Mm-hmm. And some, I just saw a wonderful, wonderful thing by Paris Hilton. Excellent show. She got sent away. Her parents, you know, the Hilton stuff. She was sort of like a rebel in the family. So when she was about 12, 13, her mom and dad hired a company to come and kidnap her out of her own home and take her out to Utah to a Mormon treatment facility to straighten her up. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't pretty what happened to her out there. And she talks about it, and she met a lot of people. And her parents paid for that because she wasn't towing the Hilton line. Okay? And they paid somebody to put her in a treatment facility and abuse her. So she was okay. So there's all kinds of abuse. And she's got some great stuff on YouTube talking about it and that kind of thing and what it's left her. A lot of people think, my goodness, she's a wonderful, sweet girl. And I think she just got married, but she said she can't sleep at night, okay, because she's always afraid somebody's going to come and kidnap her. And she said she didn't really blame her parents because she was just different. Some children are born and one is picked to be abused. And then in the movie, The Three Faces of Eve, it was just a cultural event that caused the trauma, okay, to the child. So sex abuse is just one part of abuse. It is important, but there's just neglect, negativity, okay? That's the culture. So the death of, say, family members, or brothers and sisters or friends will produce triggers of sadness and grief. But if that happens and you're a grown adult, you probably need to get into some therapy or with a trusted person so you can talk about it and cry about it through the time and, you know, maybe go to the funeral and say your goodbyes. And it's, death is a topic people don't talk about it. Okay. Nobody talks about it. Everybody wants to live. So you get cancer, we're going to go get cancer treatment. Now, in spirituality and Christianity, there is a hope past death. Okay. Your physical body is going to go sooner or later. But there's a part in there that I call it the forever person that's going to live on. And that's the part that the Bible is working with, that part. And when you have that hope that life goes on, that's going to be better, and this mess that you're in down here with your body and all the ick to be in it anymore. And so, but in therapy, no therapist is trained in how to deal with grief of death or all that kind of stuff. So I'll stop and see if anybody has any questions.
Well, Annie, I wanted to invite you into the conversation with Deborah, especially regarding, you know, death and trauma and the adult survivor of child abuse, and just to weigh in on what your thoughts are. Do you have any questions for her?
Sure. Thank you, Pastor Deborah, for covering so many facets of abuse, which you have so far in this show. I would like to comment on the part about where you split off and disassociate. I did that. I still do that. When I go to the dentist, I disassociate because it works. And but as a child, I did it, and I did it so well that I had a breakdown. And when I came out of that breakdown, I had no memory of being abused.
How it works is the mind, the soul, the biological brain, as we know, it is so capable of many things, discoveries, believing in science, and taking risks. Once you get into the spiritual part, okay, you learn that the capabilities of the mind and how it's done, it says, as you think in your heart, so you are. And so your soul is capable of disassociating. In mental health therapy, usually psychologists study this, not master's level people. They study. They know disassociation is a defense mechanism of the mind in order to endure whatever's happening. It could be a perceived fear of death. It could be real death. It could be a child abuse. It could be whatever. They know it's a defense mechanism. And they have learned, if you watch The Three Faces of Eve, you will see the psychiatrist had heard about it. They had never seen a case of it. It was very rare, but I'm sure it happened more. The military man has to do that. He leaves a civilian life, training, he becomes a soldier, and he has to kill when he wouldn't probably have done that in normal life. And you have to have a certain mindset. And, you know, when you become a mama and you're no longer a young woman, you have a change. You disassociate and you become somebody else, a mother. And so we are capable of becoming whoever we need to be. Now, during abuse, some people go, if I wasn't a female, okay, maybe I wouldn't be abused. So they start acting like a male. They become a male, a boy. They might cut their hair, wear boys' clothes. Some parents didn't want the particular sex they got. Maybe they wanted a boy and they got a girl. So they'll treat the person like a boy. In sexual abuse, two things happen. One, the soul creates instantaneously, protects itself. It's a defense mechanism. And you'll have an out-of-body experience. Now, people will say, I disassociated from the emotions. But they don't realize you'll hear stories. I don't know where I went, okay? I left. And it's a form of protection. And anytime something scary happens, disassociate. Somebody going to go through it, okay? Somebody will take the sexual abuse. It's a created part. And each time that sexual abuse came, that disassociative part happens. And they take, and they grow up. Now, then when the abuse is over, that part, that program, that person, that identity disappears. Okay? And the person that, we'll say, sort of comes back to life may have no memory of it because it didn't happen to them. So now somebody else, it happened to them. So smart therapists, psychologists work in that area. And their goal is to say, well, you're not a child anymore. You're not being abused anymore, so you don't need all those disassociative parts. And so we need to integrate them. And what that means is we need all of your memories of the abuse to come aware to the person, that part of you, that has no memory of it. You need to own everything that happened to you and have full memory of it. Now, some psychiatrists and therapists will help you through hypnosis. this one wonderful psychiatrist, he's dead now, he said he would never do that, because getting that part of you to, that doesn't have any memory of it is like re-raping you again. But in therapy, that's how they believe you become whole, by you not being disassociated anymore. But we all do it. We have a work personality. We have a home personality. We might have a personality in church. We might have a personality when we're exercising. We might have a personality when we're just with our spouse. We might have a personality when we volunteer in the community. And we're all capable of being all and many, but yet living in one body. So we're all different people. And sometimes, you know, we act different at work than we do at home. And so when you are trying to heal from all this, it takes a very skilled therapist. A lot of times they'll want to do the hypnosis and get in touch with those sort of hidden ones. And there's nothing wrong with disassociating. It's a protection. And what slowly happens is those who have been, how I would do ministry, is I would pray and say, Father, that little one that was so horribly rejected and abused, Father, they need you, those loving arms of you. They need to feel loved. Would you please take them, Father, and love on them and heal them in the name of Jesus. And whatever disassociative part that had been abused is still a child. We hear it all the time. And what, you have an inner child that needs healing? That inner child in your mind goes off with Christ Jesus. And what's left is the one that's never been abused, and you have no memories of it. And that's healing the Lord's way. Done that many a times. Therapy sort of does that, but they sort of want the abused part of you to be accepted back, sort of no more disassociation, and we want all of whoever you are, everybody has to have the memories of everything that happened, then you'll be healed, I guess. You'll be integrated. You won't be so, that's the goal of therapy. Spirituality, how I was trained, was, yeah, there is a little one there, still there in most adults. It's hurt and wounded and scared and frightened. It's, people would call it the inner child, but you may have a lot of them. And they need to be healed. Okay? And how it does is they just need to go off and be with the great healer. And they sort of disappear. And that's what happened in the three faces of Eve. The two that were not capable of moving forward with a child in a loving relationship, but because the atmosphere of love was there, Jane could come forth and she had hope. And the other two knew something was wrong. The other two personalities said, I don't know. One felt like she was dying and one was getting weaker and weaker, and she said, it will be okay if I go away. I'm not capable of raising Bonnie, was in the movie. And I like Jane, and she'll be a good one. The other one gave her dress away to the psychiatrist. Excellent to watch two disassociative parts die. Where'd they go? The mind gave them up. And Jane came forth, and she had the memories of what happened. She knew of the other two parts. She didn't blame her parents for causing, you know, the trauma. She just said that was the culture. And Jane had the memories of her life that had been locked away by the other two. And she was at peace now. And now she was healed. And she could go and marry the man and be a mother. And she wrote books. She's on YouTube. And it's excellent to watch and to see how, I mean, these three people were in one body. And when this lady had Eve light up, she was just a mousy, very low strength, no, and Jane Black, or, yeah, Eve White, I think, oh, she was out in the bars and dancing and doing all sorts of things. And Eve Black would say she'd go out and drink, get a hangover, but she didn't feel it because she'd disappear and make Eve White have the hangover. Now, that's not taught it to your master's level therapist. So if you're going to go get healing and therapy, you need to make sure that the people you're going to have studied disassociation, understand inner child work, and watch these movies and understand how are you planning to bring everybody together, you know, and what's your philosophy about this and that kind of thing. So that also out-of-body experiences, nobody wants to talk about that. Now, you'll hear about it called near-death experience when people are dying. They're in the hospital and they're up the ceiling looking down at the doctors. But you leave your body. The spirit part leaves your body. It's frightened. And it will leave the physical body. It will hang around. It might go somewhere while things are happening. And it will come back when it's over. I mean, I feel safe. And so I had to learn a lot, you know, about mental health and spiritual stuff. Did that answer your question, Miss Annie?
Yes, thank you.
So, Pastor Deborah, I have a question. So, regarding the skeptics that, you know, believe that, and this is in terms of just going through the hypnosis process, if you've, you know, experienced dissociation and are trying to reintegrate and address that, and bring up some of those memories from the other, you know, as we split, you know, the other parts of our brain that are holding those memories. Mm-hmm. I've heard skeptics claim, you know, that you could also I think the term is false memory syndrome. So,
yes, ma'am.
Yeah. So, can you explain a little bit more about that? Thank you.
Okay. Well, what happened back in maybe the 1980s or 70s? You know, we know child abuse has been going on since way back in the Roman days, Egypt. It's nothing new, okay? And what happened was children were, psychology was sort of just maybe coming on the scene or something. And people were getting in therapy and through some way, either hypnosis or talking with a therapist, they were remembering things in their childhood that their parents or uncles or people had done sexually. Now, did it happen? Could have. You know, because sometimes you're now 20, 30 years down the road, your memories aren't quite as good. People are dead. And there's no proof. But yet you've got these dreams and nightmares and, you know. So what happened was the therapist were recommending to their patients, well, you should go and file charges against your parents for child abuse, okay, or to the Catholic priest, to the nuns, or to somebody, basketball coach. And I think a lot of clients started doing that. Well, what happened was the other side, I don't know if they abused them or didn't, they rose up and they formed the False Memory Syndrome Organization. And they, as they went to court, and a lot of these people maybe had a lot of money or they were college professors or lawyers or doctors, they could afford good lawyers. And usually the person who was accusing them, they're on Social Security, disability, barely working, drug addict, whatever. But the therapist was encouraging them to go and file legal charges. And so the parents or whoever was being charged, they formed this and they went to court. And what they came up with is they said, you got these ideas from your therapist. These are false memories implanted in you during hypnosis. Because usually you're in therapy, it's just you and the therapist. And lawsuits were flying. And therapists got sued. And so the therapist backed away from encouraging that. And if you are not trained in serious child abuse, hypnosis, disassociation, this stayed in the realm of psychiatry and psychologists. And not too many people dealt with it. And they had already tried filing, as you know, we see it even nowadays, against like Harvey Weinstein, 20 years after it happens, or Bill Cosby, you know. It just doesn't work. And some people, women, okay, and they want something. They don't take so long to even prove it, okay? And they usually have lots of money. But for some reason, people want to battle it out, thinking, I'm going to win. I'm going to get my childhood back, I guess. Somebody needs to pay for this, what happened to me, okay? And most of them can't remember who it was. In some religions, like Satanism, they don't even wear, they wear a mask, okay? And so what happens is, you have religion involved with pastors doing it, football people doing it. They got money. They aren't going to let a single child who's an adult now ruin their career, their reputation. They ain't going to do it. Okay? It ain't going to happen. And so the false memory syndrome came up, and it was fighting back against the charges. I don't know if the people had false memories. Were they implanted through hypnosis? Could be. If you go watch the Manchurian Candidate and you watch, you can be, the story is, have you ever seen where somebody gets hypnotized and while they're under it, they're told that when you hear this bell ring, you're going to cluck like a chicken, and they do it. Okay, so then they go 1, 2, 3 and you're out and you're, hey, what happened? And everybody's watched it. And some people are very suggestive to hypnotism. And so a bell rings and the person gets up and starts clucking like a chicken. Yeah, that was implanted in him. And hypnosis deals with your subconscious, your deep, deep stuff. Okay? And so the false memory syndrome came out and said, oh, that therapist implanted in you those ideas. You've always been a problem child. You were running away from home. It wasn't us. We go to church. We are have reputable things in the community. We work. Look at you. You don't have it. Okay? And that's how that came out. So a lot of people just didn't even try to go there. And I think a lot of adults are still trying to make their abusers pay. Okay? And they spend a lot of energy and time in that area. And not in healing. And you know, when you go into court, you're going to tell your story. Nowadays, they do have kids' places where you get your, if somebody calls, they take you in, they do a physical exam, they tape record you, they have police and lawyers and social workers there. And you still sometimes have to go to court. Okay, because it is against the law, and you're talking the words about penetration, but the words that adults use in court are usually not the same words that the abuser used for the child. So we go, I don't know what you're talking about. We just played horsey. know, that's what we did. I rode the horse. I don't know what you're talking about because I don't know what that part is. But, you know, nobody. So you're dealing with people who have issues, lust of the flesh. Okay, is it purposely done? Is it culture? Is it tradition? All of it. But NASCA's goal is you go out and talk about it, tell your story. But even telling your story doesn't bring healing. You can say, this happened to me, but when I got in therapy, I got help. I got healed. I don't get triggered anymore. I don't have those nightmares. This doesn't trigger me. That cologne doesn't. I can be around the people that abuse me, and I have no memory of it. Okay? And so the second part of the NASCA's healing or mission statement is you need to tell your story in short form and say, even if that happened to you, there, you be hopeful and encouraged. There's hope. There is healing. And you don't have to live as a victim anymore. You don't have to live with these triggers. You don't have to live with these memories. You don't have to live in that state of a victim and grief anymore. And you would tell then your story about how you found healing. Was it therapy? Was it books? Was it inner child work? Was it prayer? What was it? Did you just study and pray? Did you do group therapy? And then you'll be able to say, yes, something bad happened to me. And hey, there's other things that may happen to you, or it did happen. Even if it did, NASCA's here to help you get healed from that so you can become a valuable advocate and talk about, yeah, something bad happened to you, okay? And we see it with kids. They have to have their legs cut off. They have all kinds of brain surgery. And they go on with life. And they're happy. And so staying in, continuing, telling your sad story of what happened when you were 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, a teenager. That's okay. If it can lead people to have hope, I don't have to live with this stuff anymore. I don't have to be angry, live in unforgiveness, and be grieved every time I see it. I can forgive. I can help other. It's going to keep happening. You're never going to stop it. And some other young kids need to know there's somebody out there that can help me overcome this and be an overcomer. And the enemy that did it to me, he may have took a good hit and hurt me for a long time, but I got up and I defeated that stuff, and I'm no longer bitter, angry, and you know, all that stuff. And I use it. This should be the goal of, you know, telling your story. Does that make sense?
Yes, it absolutely makes sense. It absolutely makes sense, and that's the whole platform of our shows.
That's right.
Thank you for restating that. It's the entire platform for our shows. And that's why these shows are archived, just like this one will be this evening. These scans are all archived, and they are used as resources for everyone and anyone who visits the NASCA website and wants to look into resources. And sometimes playing back these archived shows helps as a resource
mm-hmm.
to listen and to learn.
Okay, let's say if you were overweight and you wanted to lose some weight, you might try cutting a certain foods out of your diet. You might lose some. Then maybe you got to add going to the gym or just taking a walk. Or then maybe you got to change your diet a little bit more. Or maybe you have to have surgery. Who knows? But if you have the goal to lose weight, like if you have the goal to be healed, okay? If you work steadily towards that, it might take you years. Okay? It might take you getting away from certain people. It might take you reading books. It might take you having a therapist, being on medication. But if your goal is to say, something bad happened to me, I don't know why it happened, but I'm not going to let that defeat me. I'm not going to live that way. I'm not going to let it win. I'm not going to let it have any more victory over my life and the person that did it. I don't know where they are. I can't change them. I can only change and deal with me and my feelings and what happened to me. And some people need to be in therapy, group therapy. Some people need to go to a residential treatment for a year. Some people need to get off certain triggering foods or alcohol or cigarettes. Some people will just disassociate, compartmentalize, and move on in life like your military man, and they'll never talk about it again. And they shut that door, lock the key, and throw away the key, and it ain't never coming out. Now, sometimes what happens is people say the body holds the memories. It really, in the biological brain, it does store, as we know, we all have memories. We have short-term and long-term. It's all chemical, electrical, and it can be triggered. And that's when you get that post-traumatic stress disorder diagnosis. And what happens is it's trying to sort of come out of the closet for you to deal with it. Okay? Maybe you need to cry over it, and it's gone. Maybe you just need to, I don't want you anymore. It happened. I did what I was supposed to do or had to do, whatever, but I'm not going to hang on to it anymore. I'm letting it go. It's been 50 years since that happened. So there's all kinds of ways of letting it go and all kinds of ways of dealing with memory. And what happens is when the incident occurred as a child, all of our senses, our ears, our nose, our smells, our taste buds, everything is heightened. And chemicals are released, cortisol, all kinds of things because we're in a state of fear. And so we jump at this, we jump at that. If there's music or television on, or if there were a smell of a certain perfume or cologne, or a certain time of the day or night, those memories are there in the mind, and they have to be dealt with. And how they're dealt with, it's usually in the therapy world, they can deal it with hypnosis, can deal with it with medication. So if you get triggered, you don't have the intense biological chemical response. They can teach you how to, when you get triggered, how to, you know, take deep breaths, how to slow your breathing down because you're afraid. Fear of death is at work. Cortisol is being released until it passes. And then there's the spiritual, which is prayer, and God working with you. And so you have the three areas, the biological, and it gets messed up. It has chemicals. It has nerves. It has pleasure or pain. Your biological brain is all chemical, electrical, and it can get messed up. And then you have your thoughts and your ideas, your concepts about sex, abuse, hate, bitterness, all that's in your biological brain and in that part of you called the soul, your mental part. Then you have the spirit. And so most of the time, the spirit part does not get addressed. And there's some good therapists out there, and they try to get you to think differently about things and try to deal with your feelings. Now, there's some people, they don't want to be healed because they have now gotten so many secondary benefits to being a victim. It's their identity now. That's who they are. That's who their friends are. They're on Social Security disability. I ask them, you want to be healed? You got to give up your Social Security check and go to work. I'm not going to do that. Well, then you don't want to be healed. So I always have to ask people, do you want him to be healed? I don't know what that means. They have no clue what that means to live without the disassociative parts, to live without the bitterness, to live with joy and peace. They don't know. They've just been filled with anger and hate, and I don't have to do anything. I'm a victim. You know, that victim mentality, and that's what they end up, that's all they want. And they don't want any healing. They don't want you to tell them what to do. They won't go into therapy. They won't change. They just want to be victims and tell their story over and over, and they want no healing. And there's some that are like that. And then there's some that, you know, would only go so far, and we ain't going any farther. We ain't getting in that mess. And they'll shut down on you. We ain't going to talk about that. Because they don't want to open it up. And they don't want to expose maybe their mama or their papa or their brother or their sister or some powerful person in the community. They ain't going there. They'll just deal quietly and silently with their issues, drugs, alcohol, homelessness, maybe go into the gay community, a trans community, be run away from home, get into human trafficking, into the sex industry. They ain't going to talk about it. Okay? Can't do anything about it. People that did it, too powerful. Just make the best of it that I can. They slip into their disassociative self, and they live the best life that they can. So any questions about anything?
Well, I wanted to invite Annie back in. We have 20 minutes left, so I want to make sure, Annie, that you get another opportunity to ask Deborah a question or offer a comment about what she's shared so far.
You know, I really don't have a question. I really appreciate everything you've said, Pastor Deborah, and I don't have a question, so I'll pass it back to you, Penelope.
Okay, thank you, Annie. Well, Pastor Deborah, so, you know, I had asked a question about false memory syndrome, and I understand, thank you for, you know, explaining where that term came from, and, you know, the activity, you know, and motivation behind why that was, you know, even brought up as an issue. Because we know, you know, as adult survivors now who have gone through this process and been able to reintegrate and address these memories that have either been completely repressed or things that we have remembered but not wanted to even speak of for the first time, how difficult that is to come forward, to do that hard work, and to have that courage, and then to be met with, the anti-platform, right? Because NASA is this platform of hope and healing. Still have walked in similar shoes. And so when you're met with, opposition it's very difficult. Yeah, it's very, very difficult. But I guess my question is, you know, for someone who is doing the work, you know, who may, you know, really, really wants to go through the healing process, is going to therapy, is trying to reintegrate, that's doing the spiritual work, the body work, you know, that works very, very hard and is finally able to, you know, reclaim a repressed memory or to speak of something that they never had the courage to speak of before. I mean, how often does someone do that type of work? And how often is what they are able to push forward inaccurate?
From the person side, most people get some form of healing. You can be sort of healed without ever regaining the You know, why would you want to remember what happened to you when you were 5 years old? You're not five. You can't change it, okay? But you can find peace within yourself to have your own family, not do it with them, so it stops with you. Your people that did it to you, maybe they're dead. Okay? A lot of times people want to remember all the bad stuff. I don't remember. Most of us don't even remember being born. Okay? And so there are very few people. And this, I'll show you how it works. This lady lived with me. She was brought up in Satanism. Had a lot of issues. She was with a psychiatrist. She had multiple personalities, post-traumatic stress, depression, anxiety, and all kinds of medication. And they were trying to map all the different parts and programs. She was journaling, and she had one part that went to work, one part that drove the car, one part that went out looking for drugs and boys, one part that was a queen, one part that sucked her thumb, was a baby, one part was, oh my gosh, there was tons of, and she was living with me. And she came home, and her psychiatrist had told her, well, you know, get all the integration done to learn what part of you, what child, where is the anger, all the memories together, and for you to remember everything, okay? It might take us 6 or 7 years coming to my office 3 days a week. There'll be hypnosis and all kinds of things and brain mapping and... So God said, I'm going to show them it ain't going to take that long if they work through me. And I had, she's sitting at my kitchen table, and she had a little boy part, and when he would come up, she'd stick her tongue out at me. So I talked to him. And I said, do you like to go off and play with Jesus? Because I'm a pastor. Oh, yeah, yeah. Because, see, children want to go play. They want to be happy. They don't want to be stuck in that stuff. Okay, so I prayed and he left. And then two little girls showed up out of her crying, you took our brother, you killed our brother. No, I didn't. He just went off with Jesus playing. Well, don't you want to go? Yes, but we can't leave our sister, Carrie. I said, well, who's Carrie? Well, that little girl over there on that slab was a 2-year-old child who was deaf, blind, and lame. It was created to keep that child in that spot when he wanted to do whatever he wanted to do with to her, spiritually or physically. So I said, God, your word said you came to heal the deaf, the lame, and the blind. Get up, Carrie, and walk. And they all left. And I said, Father, take all these children and go play with them. And he took them. They were gone. All program parts. Next day she gets up and says, Pastor Deborah, for the first time in my life, I feel free that I can just run down the street and enjoy running because Satan wanted to make sure you ain't escaping from me. You cannot run away from me. And I got you tied down through children. Just one little part of her was set free by prayer. I had some of the roughest people to deal with, the most severely sexually abused, severely disassociated, programmed, mind controlled, and I got thrown into them to begin with. So a simple child abuse, it's you know, you got little ones in there, and there's somebody that doesn't want it holding the abuse. But in therapy, their beliefs are to make you whole and well and healed. We have to bring all your parts, all your programming, disassociative parts, who's everybody's got different memories, and we got to bring them all together, and everybody's got to remember them. And in the three faces of Eve, Jane had her memories back of her life. She remembered kissing her dead grandmother, but not, she wasn't Jane, she wasn't Eve White or Eve Black. It's about her parents, and they didn't mean to do it. Okay, and so are there people, are there different levels of healing? Sure. Okay, are you getting to the one that was abused? Probably not. You ain't gonna let him out. Okay, he's staying locked down. Okay, and yet that memory and that created part, wears and tears on your body. Okay, it causes stress. But the therapy world believes in healing when you can remember all your repressed abuse. Okay, have you ever watched a child being abused in child pornography? That is what they want you to remember. Every detail. And they think that is what how you will be healed. When you remember it. How do you know that that's real? We're 40, 50 years down the road. The better healing is just let it go. But in child abuse work, everybody wants to remember these repressed memories. Trigger yourself and re-abuse yourself. And you go over the child abuse again and again. That's not healing. Healing is, I was never abused. And Christianity is, I'm a new creature. I'm a child of God. I don't know what you're talking about. I was never abused. Never happened. Have no memory of it. That kind of thing. And it's hard to do. But for some reason, a lot of people want to remember all their abuse. And then they want the perpetrator to pay. Okay? Well, you know, that ain't never going to happen. Okay? I'm praying for him to be forgiven and go to heaven. He or she won't have any memories of ever abusing you. And when you get to heaven, you won't have any memories either. It'll be as if you never, because that old you, I explain it to people this way. I just saw this in my backyard, a black fuzzy caterpillar crawling along the ground. Somewhere he's going to crawl up and make a cocoon. He's going to go inside the cocoon. And I don't know how long, a butterfly's going to come out. That butterfly will never be a caterpillar again. It's changed to a new creature. Christianity offers that. But a lot of the people as adults, for some reason, they still struggle with all their memories. They want to remember the repressed memories. They want to go over all the details. They want everybody to feel sorry for them. That's not healing. Healing is you let go of that stuff. You get rid of it. If there's a hurt child in there, you send him off to go and be healed. And slowly, I had this, and so I got thrown into with some very seriously abused children who are now adults. And I had to study hard. But therapy can help. Medication can help. And studying, there's a lot of books on inner child, healing as an adult. There's a lot of books, a lot of people have written books and talked about what healed them and how they found healing and how they go through the triggering, you know, they get triggered. So there's a lot of wonderful people out there who are really trying hard to overcome this and be competent. Somebody has to be dedicated. And there are some people that do not want to be healed. They just are. And some of them will try to call me, and they're just lonely. And they want to take up hours and hours. I said, when was the last time you were in therapy? Oh, I don't go to therapy. Oh, I don't take medication. When was the last support group you were in? Oh, I don't do that. And they're 50, 60 years old. They have settled in to being a child abuse victim, survivor. When you become a Christian, you believe in Christ Jesus, he says you're born again. The old you, that child victim, you're dead. You're gone. You're buried. You are not that. And if you say that anymore, that you're still a victim of child abuse, then that's who you are. Your language has to change if you heal. I was. The old me was abused. But the new me, I'm not that anymore. And God is healing. So it's a different in your language, how you see yourself, how you talk, what you talk about. all of that changes, you know, but I hope that helps some. I'm just a different type of, I have the, both the mental health and the pastoral experience. I have been through this myself. My name used to be Jan. And God said, you're transitioning to your first name, Deborah. He made me stay home for 2 years. I said, what am I going to do? I'm going to heal you. I go, heal me of what? He said, how about 30, 40 years of issues? So 2 years I stayed at home, read the Bible, cut the grass, talked to the squirrels and the trees, watered the yard. That's all I did. What was God doing when I read the word? I was getting healed. And then I had to put Jan in the grave. And then I have thoughts like, and people would say, oh, didn't I know you? And I'd look at them and I knew them. But they knew me when I was Jan. And I'd have to go, no, I don't know you. And then I'd get these thoughts, why don't you go by and see your old home where you grew up? Well, Deborah didn't grow up there. I had to change my name. I changed my checkbook. I wasn't the same person I was when he put me down for 2 years. Okay? And then when I was finished, he said, the transition is done. I was Deborah. Now, I can talk about Jan's experiences and her family, but they are not Deborah's. And I had to learn how to talk differently and look at Jan's family. And I had to look at Jan's mother and say, you really weren't there for me, but you gave me life. And you introduced me to Jesus. That's what I'll remember. And so it takes work to be healed. And then your language changes. And you don't, do I have memories? They're not mine. But God allows me to remember Jan's memories to talk about it. But they're not Deborah's. Because Deborah's a new creature. Never existed, never been abused, never did drugs, alcohol, never had any of that issues. Because that old Jan, she went on the cross and died. Now that's from the Christianity point of view. But you can get a lot of that sort of in therapy. And you can get that from a lot of books dealing with your inner child. And you can get a lot of healing if you pursue it. And there's just different people with different beliefs about how to get healed, what healing is, what does it consist of, how you get there. And some may work for you, some may not, some other methods may be better. Maybe you need to have a particular person you pay money for, a life coach. Maybe you need to attend Zoom seminars on healing, or you need to learn how to do meditation or breathing, or who knows. So it's, I think Bill found it in AA, which is Christian oriented, and mentors and support groups and love. So not everybody wants to be healed. And everybody, I think, is trying. It doesn't sound like sometimes they're doing too good. I don't know, but does that help? And we're just about 5 minutes left.
Yes, thank you. Yes, it does help. I know, can you believe it? The time does fly, doesn't it? You've just done such a wonderful job in tackling this issue and explaining so many different facets of it. You know, Pastor Deborah, I really do appreciate it.
Uh-huh.
I know I learned a lot.
Well, one of the things that I've always had to do, if I had a suicidal person, I had to first ask one question. Do you want to live? Yes or no? And I had to believe that the spirit and the soul, no matter how depressed they were, how much they were healing to kill them, that they really wanted to. But I had to get them to say it. Then I would take it from there in prayer. So sometimes I have to ask people, do you want to be healed? Now, do you know what healing means? Your language changed. You're no longer a victim. You give up the forgiveness. You give up the anger, the bitterness. You change your language. You look at people that abused you with love. They don't. Maybe they were abused. They didn't know any better. Okay? I don't know. And some people don't want to give up that identity. They love it. They're used to it now. Them healed, they'll go to their grave, a victim. And that's, you know, but when they get to heaven, they won't have any memory of it. They'll just hurt other people along the way, and they won't be able to help anybody. They won't be able to say, follow me, follow me. I'll walk with you. I'm on my road to healing. Come on. Okay, come with me. They won't be able to do that. They'll just say, I'm right here, I'm still, whatever it is. So, all right, I'll let you close it out. It's about 3 minutes left.
Okay. Thank you, Pastor Deb. Well, thank you so much. We are 2 minutes left, and I just wanted to say I really appreciate the discussion we had this evening. I appreciate you coming on. We talked a lot about a lot of different facets of the healing process, of staying hopeful, of transitioning. Obviously, those very painful experiences into a life where we can find more joy and contentment and hope. I especially enjoyed learning about how to navigate through these difficult life events that we can experience even as we're in the healing process and in the hopeful, you know, on the other side of the maltreatment. Life still happens, and so it's nice to have those tools and be able to have these discussions to know that we're not alone and we're there for support and helping us navigate through these things as we walk. And each day we call this life. Thank you very much. I wish to thank you and also thank my amazing co-host, Annie Marges, and family, NASCA family members. So I thank you, Annie, for being on tonight. I want to encourage anybody that is curious and wants to know a little bit more about NASCA and NASCA's mission, about our services and our resources for anyone, anywhere in the world. We are a global organization. I would encourage you to visit our website, which is www.naasca.org. And every resource you could possibly wish for to address the issue of child abuse trauma intervention, prevention and recovery is on our website, and it serves the entire universe, the entire world, our entire world. So it is worldwide and globally broken up into different continents. So, and I wish to thank, you know, NASCA and all the volunteers at NASCA who have helped build what Bill Murray founded so many years ago. As I always say as we sign off on these shows, you know, there are enough adult eyes in this world to keep every single one of our children safe. So if you see something, please take action and say something, do something. It is all of our responsibilities to keep our children safe. With that, I wish to thank you and have a good evening. Good night.
Good night.
Blog Talk Radio.